All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon, America, and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, and I was a CW-2 helicopter pilot in Vietnam in 1969. In fact, I got there in December of 1969, and it's kind of the theme of the program today, is we're going to be talking about Bob Hope today. And Bob Hope, of course, to anybody who's been in the service prior to, 2000, I'm reckoning, probably knows that Bob Hope was the face of the USO. And Bob put on entertainment for the troops all over the world, starting in 1941, right up through the Gulf War. Bob passed away in 2003 at the age of 100. And this guy was the idol of almost everybody who was in the service. He went into the jungle. He went into the swamps. He went into the mountaintops. He went to Alaska. He's been to just about every country and continent in the world entertaining the troops. Today's USO is doing much of the same thing. And, of course, they've gone to Iraq and Afghanistan and Kuwait and other parts of the Middle East and around the world, also on the ships and so forth, to entertain troops, because that's what the USO does. And I want to give a little plug to the USO and kind of give you a little quick history of the USO. At the beginning, or just prior to the beginning of World War II, the USO was suggested by Franklin Roosevelt. And what he wanted to do was that he wanted to come up with some sort of organization that could bring a sense of home to the troops while they were stationed overseas. I mean, he had a pretty good premonition that a war was going to occur. And what happened is that he put together many organizations. In fact, he called on six civilian organizations, the Salvation Army, the YMCA, the YWCA, the National Catholic Community Service, the National Travelers Air Association, and the National Jewish Welfare Board. And what he wanted to do is he asked these organizations to band together to provide morale and recreation services to service members. And one of the first people that got involved with this being asked by the USO was Bob Hope. And in fact, he was asked in the spring of 1941 to go down to a camp in Southern California and put on a show, and he didn't know anything about it. And I've got a little piece that I want to play for you here in just a second. We're going to play this piece, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with an exhibit of about Bob Hope that's being displayed right now in Cleveland, Ohio. And for many of you who don't know, even though that Bob Hope was from England originally, he grew up in Cleveland, Ohio. And there's an exhibit there at the Cleveland Historical Society. And I think that it's really important that you see this. So we're going to play this little piece that I have to admit that I swiped it from YouTube. But don't tell anybody. And what I want you to find out is it's just Bob Hope through the years. And you're going to hear a number of different voices through here, and just some of them you might be familiar with. Alan Alda, Phyllis Diller, Jack Jones, Raquel Welsh, Ursula Andress, Connie Stevens, Joey Heatherton, Barbara Walters, and many, many more. So this is going to run about 6-7 minutes, and I'll be back when it's done. So here we go with Bob Hope at his very first show in 1941.
To little Nancy Diley, a kiddly divey too, wouldn't you? Adam dum dee dee dee.
Bob Hope was not only a great comedian, he also was a great hero. What he did for this country in times of crisis will always be remembered.
I just want you boys to see what you're fighting for, that's all.
I was on radio at NBC, and the producer said, they want you at March Field next year. I said, what's March Field? He said, that's an Air Force base in Riverside. I said, well, what do we do there? You know, there's no war or anything. He said, well, they want you down there, the great audience.
There you are, Cloney. You're down on your knees with 12 suitcases on your back. What are you going to do now?
Well, no sense wasting a position like this. Get out the dice.
And the audience was so great. I said, wait a minute. How long has this been going on? And Christmas time, war started, then it became dramatic. went 5 straight years all around the world just doing troops, doing troop shows. One of the greatest things that ever happened to me.
Well, here I am in London. Here we are on the USS Boxer.
Here I am in Alaska.
Colorado Springs.
Guam.
Tokyo.
Here we are in Incirlik, Turkey. Incirlik, that's a Turkish word meaning don't knock it. It beats Vietnam. Uban. Takli.
Karat.
Achukuchi.
Utapath.
Van Rang Dang Dang.
Chung Ching Chung Kang Air Base. I'm very thrilled to be here on... Where are we?
I was a little kid during the Second World War, and had these really vivid memories of sitting by the radio and listening to Hope.
Some night.
Some park.
Some moon.
Some bench.
Some grass.
Some dew.
I don't.
Finding out right away, you know what I mean?
The soldiers and sailors that he was entertaining were a real part of the show. You heard these people who were starved for entertainment, starved for some feeling of normal life again. And you heard this tremendous outpouring of energy from them.
Bob Hope, when he came to entertain the troops, it made us, and it probably made other troops feel the same way, made them forget for a little bit the killing and the dying that was taking place, even though it was for just a short time.
What's the difference between you and an idiot?
Well, for one thing, you don't have a mustache.
Such a thrill for me, all these men whistling and screaming.
Yeah, they've been in the jungle too long.
Hey, a little girl, comb your hair, fix your makeup. Soon he will open the door.
He was not interested in anything but pleasing those people.
When you went out on the stage, the acceptance was beyond a great audience, you know, that was going to give you a standing ovation before you even opened your mouth.
Say, Bob, am I standing in the right place?
Don't worry, honey. If you're not, they'll move the bass.
I don't know what I'm doing here, Bob. I can't sing and I can't dance.
Oh, just stand there. They'll do the singing and dancing. All right.
He kept the morale up. That was what his job was, to keep that morale up for everybody.
I'll give you 8 bars to make your fame and fortune. Otherwise, it's back to the swamp. Go.
I met Mr. Hope, and he wanted me to try a few bars of White Christmas.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
He kind of stunned me with his reaction because he said,
you know, Crosby's got kids everywhere. You guys did to get here, but let that be a lesson to you.
He brought a little bit of home 10,000 miles away, and especially at Christmas time.
Is Specialist 4th Brian H. O'Connell here? Where is he? Would you come up, please?
I went over to Vietnam approximately in June or July of 65. My wife was about 6 months pregnant.
Just before we got on the plane, his wife brought this over to us. And here's a picture of twins, his twins that he's never seen.
I had no idea what they looked like. I just knew that they were twin boys.
And I just want you to take a peek at these little kids as the first time he's ever seen them. Those.
My dad didn't like to talk about Vietnam much from his personal experiences. But one thing Dad did talk about from the war was the receiving the picture on stage with Bob Hope.
Congratulations.
When Bob gave me the brag book, I was proud, really proud of him, you know, and I thought it was great. I appreciate it very much. You know, it's a great feeling.
Big bang, I saw the whole gang dancing on my living room rug. Yeah, flip-flop, they were doing the bop. All the teens had to dance in blue. There was Lollipop with a Peggy Sue. But the golly, Miss Molly was a even there too.
You're a gusher? That's a geisha from Texas.
The whole front front row, I mean, the whole front section was always the guys that had like a plasma drip going in.
And they would be in beds. You knew that this was serious business. And to hear them laugh.
You remember me, Rosemary's Baby?
Oh, my faithful old nurse.
Yeah. You know, this isn't such a bad part. What the hell is all that firing over there? General, will you call off this stuff, this war, while we're on, please?
He would walk into a hospital, and only he could do this. I mean, and he would lead the gang. It was five women and myself and Peter Leeds and Les Brown, and we all, big troop. And he'd walk in there. His opening remark was, "Don't get up, fellas."
You were seeing kids that had their arms and legs removed. You were seeing guys that had the whole front of their bodies sewn up with great big staples this thick.
I broke down and cried. And he took me aside and gave me a lecture. This isn't why we're here. They want lightness. They want a joke. They want you to pretend that nothing is wrong.
Mini skirts are bigger than ever. Even some of the fellas are wearing them. Don't laugh. If you'd have thought of it, you wouldn't be here.
I think one of the most emotional shows I ever played was when I played for the 1st Marine Division in Pavuvu down in the South Pacific, because we were playing an island called Bonica, and this fellow flew over and said, "Could you possibly do an extra show for the 1st Marine Division? They've never had a show, and they would really love to see you, and they're going to invade Peleliu." And so we flew over the next morning, and you knew when you walked out there that you're playing for 15,000 kids, that a lot of those guys you never see again. And as it worked out, 60% of those kids were knocked off in this invasion of Peleliu.
At the end of the show, we would traditionally sing Silent Night.
It's a holiday season. You're away from home, a long way away from home. And they begin singing Silent Night, and the entire audience chimes in. And by the time you're singing the last refrain, most men, and we were men then, had tears rolling down their eyes.
And all you could hear were people crying.
They wanted a dry eye in the play.
It was beautiful, and it was happy, and it was very sad at the same time.
There was this entire audience of mostly men just in tears, and of course, we were all in tears. And I will never forget that moment, every single show.
Have a Merry Christmas, and God bless you. Bye.
Joyous, and you know, we laugh till we cry.
There were these guys going to go, maybe a number of them were going to go die. We're all laughing together. That's a real service.
In a lot of ways, it was probably the last performance any of those guys saw. In that regard, that speaks volumes about the man.
Bob Hope is one of a kind. He's a saint, and if he isn't, he should be. God bless Bob Hope.
And we're back on Veterans Radio, and that was a tribute to Bob Hope that I found on YouTube. It's Bob Hope through the years. And I was in Vietnam, as I mentioned before. I arrived in Vietnam on the 12th of December of 1968, and Bob Hope had his show at Long Bin, I believe, probably around the 20th to the 22nd, something like that. And since I was a new guy in that part of the world, I had to work that day, as they say. I got to fly. The interesting thing about this is that we were flying from, for those of you that are familiar with that area of the world, I was flying from Bearcat to Long Bin, and there was a no-fly area that you couldn't go over. And we got pretty close to that, and we had the Air Force came over the radio and told us, you know, aircraft heading toward, you know, Long Bin, be advised, you're flying into a no-fly zone. That was kind of a scary thing, too. But we were at about 2,000 feet, and we could look down, and we could see the amphitheater there in Long Bin, and it looked like, I don't know, 20, 30,000 troops were down there, and way down in the middle of it was this little staging area, and evidently that's where Bob Hope was putting on his show. So I didn't get to see Bob Hope in person, but I think I was pretty close. And, you know, probably with a good pair of binoculars, I could have picked him up. But he was all over Vietnam, and all the Vietnam veterans I know out there are very grateful for what he did. And all of those people that I mentioned before that went on the tours with him, I mean, these were not some, you know, these were pretty dangerous places that he went into sometimes. And so we just want to talk about Bob Hope a little bit. In fact, we're waiting for a call from the curator of the museum down in Cleveland. We have not heard from him yet. So, Eric, please call us back. We're trying to reach you so we can do that. But we are going to take a little break. And when we come back, if you heard Bob Hope in one of his shows, give us a call here on Veterans Radio at 734-822-1600. 734-822-1600. We'll be back right after this little break.
Hi, this is Susan Sarandon. Thousands of veterans are homeless and living on the streets of our nation tonight. Streets where they are being beaten, robbed, even killed. Let's take care of our own. Please join me in getting our veterans off the streets and into safe, permanent housing. You can make a donation at veteransmatter.org or text VETS to 41444 and donate any amount. They fought for us, now we fight for them. Veterans Matter.
Thanks for the memory of sentimental verse, nothing in my purse, and chuckles when the preacher said, for better or for worse.
How lovely it was. Thanks for the memory of Schubert's serenade, little things of jade, and traffic jams and anagrams and bills we never paid.
How lovely it was. We who could laugh over big things were parted by only a...
And we're back on Veterans Radio, and we're talking about Bob Hope, the first half of the program today. And as I said, we haven't been able to make connections with our guests, so let me tell you a little bit about Bob Hope. Bob Hope, born Leslie Towns Hope, was born in 1903 in England, and he moved to Cleveland when he was 4 years old, and that's where he grew up. His show business career started in vaudeville, initially on the stage, and then he began appearing on radio and in films starting in 1934. He's one of these people that was really able to make the transition from vaudeville, which was, you know, stage performances. Those of you that are listening, I remember the Ed Sullivan Show. That was what vaudeville was like. They would have, you know, constant acts showing one after another, singers, dancers, you know, Shakespearean people, jugglers, little kids, animal acts, everything else like that. And so that's where Bob Hope, you know, started kind of cutting his teeth on his career as a comedian, singer, and dancer. When radio came in, because of his great personality, he was able to make that transition to radio with the Bob Hope Show, and he became one of the most popular people in radio. And if you can imagine people sitting in their living room watching the radio, and this is what they did. And it's you know, it's sort of like our kids and grandkids and great grandchildren are doing now. They just kind of watch their their little technology, you know, little screen there. Well, prior to the invention of television, this wasn't possible. So Bob Hope made his name, you know, in radio and in some movies early on. He and Bing Crosby paired up and made some great movies together. And when television after World War II, and I'm looking at the run-up for him is that Bob Hope made 57 tours with the USO between 1941 and 1991. That's 50 years, folks. And he was declared an honorary veteran of the United States Armed Forces in 1997 by the Act of Congress. He also appeared in numerous specials on NBC television. If you can remember, growing up in the late 50s, and especially during the 60s and early 70s, there would always be the Bob Hope Christmas special, where he would talk about his trips overseas and the impact that, you know, not only that he had on the veterans and the military that were there, but also on him. And I think that's kind of neat. So he made the transition into movies, again, with Bing Crosby especially, if you'll remember that, those Road to Wherever it was. They kind of had these little fun things going on between them. And then with the advent of television, all Bob did was go back to his vaudeville acts and bring that back to the stage. And he was one of these rotating guests on some of these programs, especially for Frigidaire or Kraft, or most of them were on NBC. He seemed to have a long relationship with the National Broadcasting Company. And I can remember seeing one of his programs where he comes out and he says he's been on television, I think he said, three times. And so he gets he's going to make it. And obviously he did. Just an amazing man, an amazing talent, and it's a really great story of an immigrant kid coming to America and making it big. And I think that's what's so important about Bob Hope. And I wish that we would be able to tell more about him today. And I was hoping that we could, but maybe we'll get back to it in the new year. But I do want you to get, you know, don't be mad at Cleveland. I can't help it right now. What I want you to think about, though, is at the Western Reserve Historical Society, inside of this building of the Western Reserve Historical Society, there is a Cleveland History Center. And the Cleveland History Center houses exhibits that tell the story of Northeastern Ohio through items, documents, and artifacts from a variety of collectors. Well, right now there is a show going on there. And this is called Bob Hope and American Treasure. And it's sponsored by the World Golf Hall of Fame exhibit. That's kind of cool. But anyway, so it's hosting this traveling exhibition celebrating entertainer Bob Hope. It's running up until June 30th, 2017. It's open to the public. The exhibit complements the Golf Hall of Fame, as I mentioned before. Highlights of Hope's life, including his relationship with the armed forces. He has the exhibit has over 200 vintage photographs, and it's sort of like, it's set up like a montage of his life, because there were many things that he did in Cleveland, before he actually went on the stage, and it talks about a tough life that he had with his dad was a carpenter, and, you know, trying to eke out a survival in the early, 1900s or 20th century, and how he moved his way through school and, you know, was kind of a smart aleck, which we can tell by watching him doing his work and so forth. And this exhibit is there. It is free for you. As I said, it's at the Western Reserve Historical Society in Northeastern Ohio, sharing our stories, Bob Hope and American Treasure. And you can go online and find this information by just going to www.wrhs.org. That's wrhs.org/Bob Hope and American Treasure. That's WRHS. That's funny. Anyway, it's only funny to me because I went to Watchung Hills Regional High School, WHRHS. Anyway, so it's wrhs.org/Bob Hope and American Treasure. I think you'll really enjoy this. You can find all kinds of stories about Bob Hope, his childhood. And in addition, as I mentioned before, for those of you that are really enjoy Bob Hope, especially during his doing his shows in Vietnam, that you're going to be able to find them on YouTube. And I probably should have just played a couple of more of those for you. But they're all on there. And it's really kind of neat. And he talks about being in different parts of the country. And some of you I know out there have seen his shows. And I wish we had set up time for you to tell about them. But in the meantime, that's what happens in a live radio, folks. Sometimes a guest forgets, or unfortunately maybe something unfortunate happened to our guest for this afternoon. Coming up in the second half of the program, we're kind of doing something similar in this, and that we're going to be talking with Lydia Bastiavich, Lydia Bastiavich, who's an author, a chef, restaurateur, and she's host of the PBS program Lydia Celebrates America, Holiday for Heroes special, which is coming up on Christmas Eve next week on on public television in Detroit. And it's going to be at 2 p.m. on Christmas Eve. And I think this sounds like it's really going to be fun. And I'll be introducing Lydia a little bit later on. She went out and she cooked for a whole bunch of veterans. Let's put it that way. And I think it's a great story. We've got to have two veterans on the line that are going to talk about their experience with Lydia. And again, you're listening to Veterans Radio. If you've got a comment or a story you'd like to add to us today, give us a call at 734-822-1600. Whew, we got a minute to go. And anyway, so we're going to do that. And then at the end of the program, we are going to, I'm not going to give you our ending right now, but we're going to be playing a little of Louis Armstrong song with It's a Wonderful World. And so we want you all to stay tuned for that. And we'll kind of have our little Christmas greeting at the end of the program. But I think we're going to go to our theme music right now. And I'm just going to sit back and relax for about a couple of seconds. And all of you, come back here for the second half of the program. You're listening to Veterans Radio, and we'll be back after the news. Back on Veterans Radio this week before Christmas, and again we're trying to reach one of our guests, and so it's kind of, you know, you just get to listen to me for a minute here, but we're trying to get a hold of Lydia Bastiavich, and she's the author and restaurateur and host of PBS's Lydia Celebrates America Holiday for Heroes special, which is coming up on Christmas Eve, and I believe we've got her on the line right now. So we're going to bring her on. Lydia, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Wow. Well, thank you very much for being where you're supposed to be.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm delighted to speak to you and everybody that's listening.
Well, I wanted to ask you about this program that you've got coming up next on Christmas Eve. Can you tell me a little bit about it?
Yes. You know, I am a chef, and I do a yearly, 1 hour yearly special about America, because I am an immigrant. I came to America when I was 12 years old, and, you know, I made my life here. I had a great opportunity, the freedom that I've got here. And I thought this year, because I was always very appreciative and sensitive to our veterans. Those are the ones that keep us, our country free, that give us the freedom, the security. And I says, I need to interact with some veterans. I need to talk to them. But, you know, food is the only way I know how. I'm not a journalist. And so we began with cooking. We're talking about food, meeting some veterans. And it was extraordinary because kind of food opened them up. Everybody kind of connects food with their lives, with their family, with their parents, with the special holidays. And it is especially true when you are out there and deployed like these veterans were. So when we got talking about food, they opened up and told me the story. it's so deep in my heart now what I experienced in the interviews that I had. And I hope that everybody truly enjoys and understands and ultimately really, really thank and appreciate these young men and women and what they're doing for us.
Well, it sounds like a great idea, and you had all these, the promo shows, you know, a number of these veterans sitting around a table and just talking and having meals, and we've got a couple of them on the line. I'm going to bring on one first, and that's going to be Brian Anderson,
And oh, Brian is there. Aye, aye, aye.
Yeah, he is. Brian is a triple amputee. He enlisted in the Army in April of 2001, was shipped out on September 11th, 2001, served two tours of duty in Iraq, was stationed in the Baghdad area. In October of 2005, an IED was set off by the Humvee that he was riding in, resulting in the loss of both of his legs and his left hand. After 13 months of rehab at Walter Reed, he's returned to skateboarding, surfing, rock climbing, and gives motivational speeches to veteran organizations all across the country. Well, Brian, we've got a big audience for you to talk to. Welcome to Veterans Radio.
Oh, thank you. How are you guys doing?
We're doing fine. Lydia, say hi to Brian.
Brian, are you there, Brian?
How are you doing, Lydia? It's good to see you or hear from you.
Well, we're trying to get everybody on here at the same time. But, Brian, how did you get hooked up with Lydia for this special program?
Well, I hosted a little web series on We Are the Mighty. And so I became friends with August Dunhill. And he's the one who brought me on. I got an email one day saying that they wanted a veteran, and I went in to kind of interview for it, and I don't know, they gave it to me. The next thing I know, Chef Lydia's at my house, and I'm just like, oh, wow.
That would be kind of exciting, I would think.
It was very cool. It was a great experience, and it was really cool to have her in my house and create this amazing meal with everything that I already had there. So it was kind of cool. Well, she brought a couple things, but basically everything I had.
So, Lydia, in this special, did you go to each house separately initially?
Well, we did. I interacted with each one of them separately, and then we got together. We had a meal all together in Los Angeles. And then we had a big meal. It was a Christmas meal on the USS George Washington, and it was just phenomenal. And Brian, do you remember the recipe? You still cooking that pasta recipe?
Yeah. My parents think I'm crazy for cooking shrimp.
What's the matter with cooking shrimp?
Because they know I never really liked it, but I really liked the dish that Chef Lydia made me. And it was just a shrimp pasta, but it was really good. And,
you know, if it takes somebody with the talent of Chef Lydia to make shrimp something that you're going to like and you didn't like it your whole life, I might have to get this recipe to work on it with my grandchildren to see, see if I can get them to, or even me, to eat some foods that I don't normally eat. Well, Lydia, I've also got August on the line as well. And so, August Dunhill, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hey, guys. Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right. You can all say hello. You can do that.
How you doing, August? This is Lydia.
Lydia, Brian, good to hear your voices.
Well, I'm really excited to have all three of you on this program. August actually is kind of, you were one of these producers that produced this program, aren't you?
Not Lydia's show, but I work for a digital media company called We Are the Mighty, which is all about veteran media. We're a veteran entertainment brand. So part of my canon there is food, our food shows. So I've been kind of traveling around the world and trying to find the best stories I can find surrounding military and veteran communities, as well, you know, having to do with food.
I like that concept.
But August is also you're a good chef as well. So, you know, you helped me plan the meals out.
Thanks, Lydia. Yeah, yeah. It's one of my greatest pastimes, my greatest things to do, are to cook for my fellow veterans and other people, other vets that I know and vets that I don't know sometimes as well.
Well, I think it's interesting, August. I want to let you give a plug for your film, The War at Home, but you were a Navy veteran. You enlisted after September 11th, and you stayed in for almost 7 years and went into film. I think that's really cool. So tell me about the War at Home a little bit.
Well, the War at Home was a short film I made. It was my thesis film at NYU. So when you're finished with the film school at NYU, we all make these films. Not all of us, actually. They actually have kind of a process to figure out who's going to make films and who actually isn't. But the War at Home was based on a play that I co-wrote with a company of writer actors in New York City. And we interviewed over 40 veterans and their families, and we put together a one act, like kind of 90-minute play, called Cadence Home. And then I took one of the, it was like kind of five different storylines of veterans. And I took one of those storylines and I turned it into a 15-minute screenplay. It's the story about a veteran coming home to New York City after being in war in Iraq.
Well, it sounds very interesting, and I'm fascinated by the idea of veterans making movies and writing books and, singing their songs and all these other things. And I see that you went through the John Stewart Veteran Immersion Program, which I didn't really know anything about until just reading it in your bio. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, John is an amazing advocate for veterans. He's an amazing, very down to earth guy for how popular he is, and one of the things he wanted to do before he left the Daily Show, before he kind of retired, was to start an internship just for veterans at the Daily Show. So it was a summer kind of internship, because a organization called American Corporate Partners is all for setting up veterans in business. And, and getting them into the industries that they're interested in. They contacted him and said, can you mentor a veteran? And he's like, well, I'd rather mentor 20 or 12 or whatever the number was, every year. And it's not just him, it's his entire staff. So we basically spent 8 weeks, going over there and kind of immersing ourselves in each department of what the Daily Show does, and for a show that's that great, that does such an amazing job of entertaining as well as keeping it real in the media world. Mm-hmm. It was an amazing experience.
Well, it just sounds like a great idea, and we're talking with Lydia Bastianich. There we go.
Oh,
I got it. Anyway, Lydia, I'm sorry about that, but Lydia has produced a program that is going to be seen on Christmas Eve. It's called Lydia Celebrates America, Holiday for Heroes, and we're talking with two of the veterans that participated in this program, and I want to come back to you, Brian, just a little bit. You said that Lydia came to your house and has shown you how to make incredible shrimp and things so far, and where did it go from there? Were you part of the big meal at the end of the program?
I was part of a smaller meal in L.A. The other meal was on an aircraft carrier, and that was in Norfolk, Virginia.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't able to go to that, but it was very interesting. It was cool. We sat and talked for a bit. I went and showed her some of my skateboards and one of my hobbies. And then we just kind of had a dinner in the Hollywood Hills, which was absolutely beautiful. It was really interesting to see these veterans come together from different branches and just kind of be brothers and sisters. And it doesn't matter what branch of service you're in. It's about the service. And you really do feel that. So it was really cool to have that and have Lydia bring us all together.
I think that's a very interesting statement that you just made, Brian, about I think once we're all out of the military, it kind of becomes a mutual admiration society. And because we really didn't know what every other branch did at their time, but the idea that they signed up to do it, that's the important thing. And, we all did that. At some point in our lives, we all, put our hand up and said, yeah, we're going to do this. And, we go off and do it. And now I'm finding myself, as I meet more and more veterans by doing this program, of course, is that I really admire the work that they did, whether they were in the Army or the Marines or the Navy or the, you know, the Coast Guard, the Air Force, whatever it was. I mean, we still, of course, have our little inter-service rivalries, but you still can't help but admire these men and women.
I agree. That's very well said. Yeah, there's definitely those rivalries, too.
Yeah, some guy the other day was on one of our programs and was talking about, you know, the Marines versus, you know, wants to roll the, what do you do? You want to roll the infantry into the Marines, and, you know, that's not going to happen. So that's another topic. But, so Lydia, tell me about this meal on the deck of the George Washington. It sounds like you cooked for a few people.
We did. We cooked for about 300. That meal was for about 300 people, and I understand that there's 3,000 on that carrier. And we took just one part of the dining room and the kitchen, and the chief, I guess the executive chef of the carrier came in the kitchen, and a lot of assistants, and we cooked all together, and it was just wonderful. Bob Woodruff came in and helped, and I mean, you know, there's no way that you know, I myself and a few others can cook for 9,000 or 3,000, but for 300 it was doable with the help of the on board, if you will, chefs and sous chef. And it was wonderful. It was wonderful because it was such a closeness, and then we sang Christmas carols. It was just, for me, you know, having talked and interviewed and kind of befriended the actual veterans that came back from the war. And then all of us together, meeting the young, if you will, sailors in this, or that were just going out. Their tenure had just begun, and how excited they were, and how and even the rapport of these the veterans that came back, the mature and the young that were going, you know, it's this kind of you know, now you take care, now you go, you know, and they looked up to the veterans, the shall I say, the old veterans. So the whole thing was just amazing, but just the size of the ship itself.
I was just going to ask you about that. What was it like going on an aircraft carrier, which is, you know, like, I don't know, a couple of thousand yards long?
It's like 3 football fields.
Wow!
And it's 9 stories high, and you go up and down. There's no elevator, of course. You go up and down, and there it's divided. It's very, very well organized and clean, and it, you know, it's wonderful to see. We went up to the cockpit as well.
I'll bet.
And you know, to see all the electronics, all the, I mean, you know, the how much needs to be known to carry this big vessel into territory and to ultimately use it to protect us.
I always find it amazing, and you just pointed it out, I think, and probably we all are aware of it, how young that some of these men and women are that are responsible for this, you know, floating aircraft carrier, you know, and some of those, probably some of the people up there on the bridge where you were 19, 20 years old.
Exactly. And, you know, and, you know, I was amazed. But I guess it takes the strength, the organization, the, you know, down from the captains all the way down, I guess it's and I think all of the veterans spoke about it. It's this discipline and this organization and this reason to do, you know, to have a commitment. You know what you're there for. You know what you're going to do. And the discipline, I think, is one of the most telling factors of why this works.
Well, I think it probably relates to your cooking. Isn't your cooking have to be fairly disciplined?
It is. It is. A kitchen has to be. It has its brigade, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And it has, you know, the leaders and then each department divided and then subdivided and so on. Absolutely. Everybody has to know their job. Everybody has to do it. There's one commander at the end of the day, you know, and then each section. Oh, there is, in a much smaller kind of magnitude. Mm-hmm. But yes, yes, it is. It's, you know, and it's, I guess, working all together for one goal.
That's the mission. It's always the mission. Everybody working together for one, you know, one ultimate goal, which I think is always so exciting when you talk to people that are in the military, or it sounds like that are, you know, chefs cooking for 300 or more. I always wondered how they ever got all that food out in a timely fashion when I was in the service, either it was in a mess hall or it was out in the field. We always got food somehow. And I, you know, how did they manage to do that? I think that, that's amazing. Well, Brian, I wanted to ask you, have you continued on with your cooking or are you expanded your taste tests?
I am. Cooking's a lot of fun, and it's therapeutic, and it just gives you something to do sometimes. The other day I made a Kentucky hot brown, which is this dish in Kentucky. It's basically like Texas toast, sliced roasted turkey breast, a Monet sauce, and bacon on top. It's really good.
That sounds like it's really good. You can impress your friends and family with that.
It was interesting. I'm going to have to get some people to try it.
Thanks. And August, what is what's next for you?
Well, I just finished these productions of the show's called Meals Ready to Eat, which is on Go 90. It's the military food show. Our last episode was in Israel. We went to Israel and we were talking about olive oil makers, olive farmers in Palestine and Israel. They're kind of working towards peace over there. So that was amazing. And so there's a lot of editing to be done. I kind of oversee the editing process and I, it's all the voiceover and everything that needs to happen for that. So there's a lot of that. And then, you know, the company I work for, We Are the Mighty, you know, we just hit our 2-year mark, and we're still growing. So there's a lot of growth to be done there and, you know, decisions to be made and other people to hire and, you know, what are we going to do next? So hopefully I can keep telling these stories about my fellow veterans like Brian, you know, and keep, you know, cause we're both in LA and, you know, we work together and it's, you know, we're friends. And, you know, continue to kind of broadcast these great stories and find these great stories, you know.
I think it's fascinating. Brian, August, where would people watch some of your films? Are they available on your website or YouTube or what?
Yeah, there's a lot on Weir.
Oops.
Yeah, it's all on wearethemighty.com. So if you go to wearethemighty.com, there's a lot of stuff there. And then there's 6 of our shows are also on the Go 90 network. So if you go to go90.com, you can watch stuff there, and then you can download. There's also a Go 90 app where there's We Are the Mighty content.
That sounds fascinating. Well, Lydia, you must feel good about helping these, you know, giving these people some airtime and some promotion.
Well, I think they're so deserving, and I think that, you know, America really needs to know and truly appreciate what these young men have and women are doing to keep America safe. And, you know, we need to do that for them, and they will continue. They continue. You see their passion, even though they're out of the military, out of the service, they continue the messaging. So valiant.
It is very true, and I think, you know, one of the things that we learned in the military is that somebody's always got your back, and I think that that's continuing into our civilian lives now. And I want to thank you, Lydia Bastilovich, I'm reading it and I can't even read it. Anyway, I want to encourage people to go to their local PBS station and watch her program, Lydia Celebrates America, Holiday for Heroes. It's supposed to, at least in the Detroit area, it's going to premiere on Christmas Eve. And so if you go to pbs.org/Lydia, L-I-D-I-A, you probably can find out when it's going to be shown in your area. Thank you very much, Lydia, for being on Veterans Radio. And Brian and August, I want to thank you both very much for being on the program. And I can't wait to search out more information and try some of Lydia's recipes myself.
Thank you
very much. Merry Christmas to everybody. Thank you.
Merry Christmas to all three of you, and thank you so very much for your service.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
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 All right. We'll be right back in just a moment.
From Saigon, Long Bin, Bearcat, Da Nang, Coo Chi, Play Coo, Lai K, Chu Lai, Phu Cot, Van Rang, and Cameron Bay in Vietnam. From Guam, Wake Island, and Clark Field in the Philippines. From the USS Ranger and the USS Coral Sea on Yankee Station in the Gulf of Tonkin. And from Korat, Bu Dorn, Tak Li, U Ban, Nakhon Phanom, and Bangkok, Thailand. The Bob Hope Christmas Special.
That's all right. We're back on Veterans Radio, and that's just a listing of places that Bob Hope was in Vietnam. And for those of you that were there, hopefully some of you got to see him. It was a great opportunity to bring a little bit of home into our lives over there during that year when we just couldn't stand it sometimes. We just, you know, we all just wanted to get home so bad. I want to thank everybody for listening today. We want to make sure that you are go to our website, veteransradio.net. We will not be here next week. Our home station will be playing Christmas music throughout next Sunday, so we will be back next year. And we'll have many, many more stories up to tell you about America's veterans and about what's going on in the military with our new commander-in-chief. So until next week, or until next year, you are dismissed, and a very, very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to all of you.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white. The bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. Watch them grow. They're like much more than I never knew. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.